Thank you, everyone. My name is Dan Schatzberg. I'm presenting EBRT, a framework for building per-application library operating systems. And this is joint work with my group at BU. It's Jim, Han, Aran, and my advisor, Jonathan Apavu. A common problem in operating systems is that general-purpose operating systems sacrifice the performance of individual applications in order to remain generally applicable. On the other hand, if we build custom special-purpose systems, it requires a significant effort not only to develop them, but also to maintain them and modify them when we need to address changing circumstances like new hardware or different application models. And we ask ourselves, is this trade-off fundamental, or can we build operating systems with both higher performance and reduced effort? And we address this problem in this work. I want to start by providing a little more context. You know, cloud computing allows users to rent entire virtual machines to run their own OS and their own applications. And that provides a few interesting opportunities for operating systems. We're not unique in making this observation, but the OS no longer needs to provide protection and isolation in a cloud context. The hypervisor or the cloud provider is really responsible for doing the resource allocation, the isolation, and the protection. And we exploit this by building custom library operating systems for individual applications rather than building general purpose operating systems that can run many applications. So our work, EBRT, is really a framework for constructing per application library operating systems. And this allows us to both achieve high effort and due to it being a framework, both allows us to achieve high performance, and due to it being a framework, it does not take as much effort as building completely custom systems from scratch. And just to kind of visualize it a little bit, we really have a collection of component system software components that let us build a library operating system. Library operating system is one where the OS functionality is linked into the application address space, and we can run that directly on top of a hypervisor. And again, rather than construct a single general purpose library operating system, we provide a collection of OS components providing functionality such as memory allocation or networking, and developers can use those or extend them, replace them, discard them in order to construct and deploy their own application. Some just quick concrete implementation details. We distribute EBRT as a toolchain which builds bootable ELF images. And on top of that, we have a library of some core system components that you can use to link into your application. Our implementation also allows us to incorporate the use of many existing libraries like the C and C++ standard libraries, Boost, and many other application-level libraries. I want to spend the remainder of this talk really talking about some architectural decisions we made that in some sense enable both the high performance that you can get by customizing a single application, but also make it easier to build additional applications from a common source base. The first property of our architecture is this low-level event-driven execution environment. And what that allows us to do is get applications to be written much more closely to the hardware interfaces and achieve very high performance because of that. The second property I'm going to talk about is what we call the heterogeneous distributed system architecture. And what we do is we accept that in a cloud environment, we're not committed to running a homogeneous set of operating systems across all the virtual machines that we control. We can run some virtual machines that run, say, Linux or any other general purpose operating system, and use those to offload functionality for compatibility. And that drastically reduces the effort needed to port existing applications. And the third aspect of our architecture, where the name comes from, is what we call elastic building blocks. And this is the actual unit of encapsulation for a piece of functionality that we use to then compose an application. I'll talk about each of these in detail. I'm going to start with the first and walk through each of these by going through an application example. In order to describe how our event-driven execution environment works, I first want to consider sort of the inefficiencies of running an application like Memcached on top of Linux. Memcached, for those unfamiliar, is an in-memory key value store that's accessible via the network. And what it does is pretty simple. Requests come in, it looks something up in memory or stores something in memory, sends a response out over the network. And sitting on top of Linux, you have an interrupt fires, hits the device driver. The device driver then has to schedule a thread to run in a preemptive context to then pull the packet off the device driver, goes up through the network stack. You have to do a context switch to get into the application. When the application actually reads, which actually suffers another context switch, you then have to copy a packet to user space. During much of the time here, you've got interrupts enabled, so anything else can fire and preempt what workload is going on here. And you have a ton of extra logic in this network stack to deal with multiplexing multiple processes, quality of service, or denial of service. And so the real takeaway is that these general purpose operating systems introduce what looks like a lot of inefficiency for an individual application. If all I want to do is run memcached within a virtual machine, this is not the way I want to do it. So how are things different with EbRT? Our base execution environment enables a few things. One, these applications execute at the highest privilege level within a virtual machine. Two, we use identity mapped memory with large pages, and that drastically improves TLB performance. And three, the execution begins as non-preemptive events that are generated by either hardware or software. So we can right away start executing application code off a device interrupt. So memcached, we re-implemented it on top of EbRT. And when an interrupt fires, it invokes the device driver, which synchronously just makes function calls up through the network stack, up to memcached, and then handles the request and returns back the response the same way. There's additionally no interrupts enabled during this time, so it's all run to completion. We don't have to copy memory because everything's sitting in the same address space. There's no additional paging. There's no complex scheduling. It's drastically simpler. In order to enable this, we built a new network stack which provides a scalable and event-driven interface. So rather than POSIX or BSD sockets, the core interface of the network manager is up calls, right? Here's your data, please do something with it, rather than give me data. And that means that we can do things synchronously from the bottom through the device driver and up to the application right away. We evaluated memcached, in particular, we were looking at 99th percentile latency as a function of throughput. And we consider the achievable throughput while staying under some SLA, like 500 microseconds in this case. And in this example, we ran a Linux virtual machine with six cores, ran memcached across all six cores. We used the mutilate request generator and the Facebook etc workload, and this is all over TCP. And Linux in a virtual machine can achieve about 500 microseconds. But what we can do with specializing to the application's needs in EbRT allows us to get over 1,000 requests per second, still staying under the same tail latency requirements. And that's more than a 2x throughput improvement for EbRT. And additionally, we also ran memcached not within a virtual machine as Linux and EbRT are, but just running on top of Linux on the bare hardware, no overhead of virtualization, and still doesn't achieve the performance we can get by customizing through EbRT. These overheads are largely within the kernel. And there's a number of other benefits. I'll point you to the paper. We can support blocking semantics, so we can build a socket library on top of our network stack and port existing applications that way. Also, when you have event-driven non-preemptive execution, read, copy, update is something really, really easy to implement and gets you some big scalability wins. And we also don't need thread local data structures. We can use core local data structures to manage some scalability issues. Returning to the aspects of our architecture, I'm going to next talk about these two elements, both this heterogeneous distributed system architecture and our distributed object model, these elastic building blocks. And Memcached is a small and simple application. It was feasible for us to rewrite the entire application to our new interfaces and get huge performance gains out of it. But we also want EBRT to support large and complicated applications. And these two properties of our architecture really allow us to drastically simplify the effort required there. So we ported an application called Node.js. It's a large JavaScript environment for server applications, like a web server. And in total, it incorporates over 1 million lines of code, many different libraries, and it requires I/O across the board. So we're able to reuse our event-driven network stack, use some of our blocking semantics to quickly port Node.js networking on top. But it also needs a file system, right? That's one part of it that we didn't use for Memcached. And we thought, okay, we could implement a file system that then talks to a disk driver and implement all that from scratch. But we don't yet know how necessary that is, right? Yes, we need the interface, but it's a lot of functionality that already exists in other operating systems. And there's no clear reason that we should be re-implementing it ourselves. So, before we have anything working, building a file system is excessive effort. We'd really be duplicating that functionality. And our thought was, well, we can just offload functionality here. So in a cloud environment, I can spin up a virtual machine running Linux, and when I make a file system access on a library OS, I'll function ship that over to the Linux machine and make the calls there. And this way, I very quickly get file system implementation running on my system. Yes, the performance isn't great, but I've got something working to begin with. And we provide this library, libebrt, which aids in this offloading functionality. We also encapsulate this kind of distributed behavior with something we call elastic building blocks. And it's really a first-class primitive for encapsulating distributed software. So in the case of the file system, an EB defines the standard POSIX file system interface when it's invoked on library OS, that call is handled by a local representative of the file system EB. That local representative, under different implementations, can do different things. It can directly invoke a device driver or something, or in this case, can function ship the call to a representative running on a Linux machine and handle it there. And we can do all sorts of games with this once we've defined the interface. We can swap out implementations to do things like, say we want to run multiple instances of Node.js across multiple library operating systems. We may find that this creates contention on the Linux machine for our offload. But we could start playing games like caching files locally on different library operating systems, having the representatives communicate amongst themselves about where data is stored and alleviate some of the contention. I'll also add, the paper goes into more detail here, but the elastic building blocks are also quite lightweight. We use it not just for these large distributed objects, but also objects in the small, like a memory allocator, where it's really performance critical that you can call into the object quickly. It scales down to that kind of level. We ran the V8 JavaScript benchmark suite. What's important here is it's compute only. There's no I/O going on. It doesn't interact with any of these mechanisms. And compared the performance under EBRT to the performance under Linux. And even though these are purely compute-bound benchmarks, we're getting, as you can see on the right, somewhere around 5 or 6% speed up over Linux across the board. And in particular, the Splay benchmark happens to be very memory intensive and shows some of the advantages of using large pages to eliminate TLB pressure. But the real big part of this evaluation that was important to me was that this only took about 3,000 new lines of code to port an application that's about 1 million lines of code. And it took about 2 weeks to do. There's a lot of aspects of this that were simplified through other techniques that we talk about in the paper. One is, again, we distribute EBRT as a tool chain. So it means porting initially just looks like cross-compilation. You just pass in a new compiler, and it starts to build. Also, the fact that we provide language and library compatibility is really nice because these large existing applications just inherit all that functionality. And we also talk in the paper a lot about language-level primitives, which makes development a lot easier. I'm going to wrap up now. I want to reiterate these three design elements in IBRT, both our low-level execution environment, the heterogeneous distributed system, and the distributed object model. These all really help us achieve really high performance for the applications where the effort is necessary, but also to let us very quickly get things working in a custom library operating system, at which point we can start to make new optimizations. I encourage people to go look at our code online, talk to any of my co-authors, and I'm happy to take any questions.
We have time for some questions. Maybe I'll start. I'm wondering about the difficulty of, given an existing application, figuring out, you know, which parts you want to put onto a library OS and which parts you want to keep running in the usual environment. Can you is that, in your experience, difficult, or can you imagine some tool support that will help a developer do that?
Yeah, I definitely think you want some form of profiling or something to guide that behavior, rather than just starting with, okay, what are all the interfaces I need, and just moving everything over. Because you're right, this offload mechanism doesn't just mean that we can get compatibility from the library OS to the Linux. We can also take an existing application and just offload small parts of that application into a custom library OS. To date, we don't really have a very principled way of doing that. It's on an application by application basis.
Okay, thank you. Please.
Hi, I'm off the UTH Zurich. Nice work. Do you have a sense of how much of the performance gain you're getting? You're still running over a virtual machine, right? So how much of the performance gain you're getting from networking is due to the fact that you've got this sort of nice sort of stack that you've written and things, and how much of it is simply the fact that you're doing, you know, user-level networking that you could do without a virtual machine with something like DPDK or Open Onload or things like that? Did you sort of do a breakdown of where the performance gain is coming from?
Yeah, it's a good question, particularly because I have a slide for this.
I really didn't know that.
Okay, so this lets me show tables of data, which I like to do. So I'm not sure how legible this is, but the top table is Memcached CPU efficiency metrics. So we basically blast Memcached as high throughput as we can at both IBRT and Linux in a virtual machine, and we get somewhere close to about 3x higher throughput. There's sort of two numbers that jump out here. One is the IPC, instructions per cycle. We're slightly higher there. The lion's share of the difference, though, comes because we execute close to a third of the number of instructions per request. So I don't think it's one trick that it's like, okay, large pages, or it's lack of context switching, or any one of these. These add up and give you kind of that IPC win, but the re-architecting everything from hardware to application is what gives you that instructions per request win, which I think is much, much more important in this case.
Thanks.
So I have two questions. One's related to Monty's question over there, which was, have you tried running this without running in a VM at all, like IBRT? And what kind of performance do you get there?
It's something we've worked with. So yeah, you're completely right. Like I kind of proposed this as all being solving problems within a virtualized cloud. But there's no reason we have to have a virtualized cloud to still get isolation protection outside of it. The big issue for us is just the effort of developing drivers for whatever hardware we're going to have. But there's no particular reason that we are dependent on virtualization to do this. It is something we are looking into, either porting drivers or developing some of our own to start to explore the advantages here.
Cool. And then the second question is, this seems...
A short one, please.
Yeah, it'll be very short, I promise. So it seems as though this build step that you do is tied to C and C++ code. How hard would it be to do this for other languages?
I think any language that's going to then depend on a C and C++ tool chain, no problem. You just have to make use of that. You know, something like Node.js, of course, once we've ported the runtime, we're fine. We can run JavaScript code. I'm not too familiar with you know, every other language, but each of them you just have to either port the runtime or port the toolchain. Fortunately, once you've got C and C++ working, you have a pretty large base to work off of.
Great, thank you.